in general, students in virtual schools perform much worse on state assessments compared to students in brick and mortar schools.
Hi, and welcome to GAO's Watchdog Report, your source for news and information from the U.S. Government Accountability Office. I'm your host, Holly Hobbs. Even before COVID-19 drew national attention to remote learning, enrollment in virtual schools had actually been increasing faster than enrollment in other public schools. And the vast majority of students attending virtual schools are enrolled in virtual charter schools. But there are concerns about how well students are performing and whether the self-paced, mostly online learning format is producing negative results. Today we'll find out more from GAO Director Jackie Nowicki, an expert on K-12 education. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Holly.
So Jackie, the pandemic has been disruptive to all students, but we looked at student performance at virtual charter schools before COVID. How does this performance compare to other public schools?
So in general, students in virtual schools perform much worse on state assessments compared to students in brick and mortar traditional schools or brick and mortar charter schools. So for example, let's look specifically at charter schools since they account for about 70% of students enrolled in virtual public schools. So the average math proficiency rate for virtual charters was 25 percentage points lower than the rate for brick and mortar traditional schools, and 18 percentage points lower than brick and mortar charters. And those gaps are statistically significant even when we controlled for a variety of student demographics. So things like race and ethnicity and income, and also when we controlled for differences in state testing policies and standards.
So given the differences in performance, what can you tell us about how instruction might differ between traditional versus virtual schools?
So virtual schools largely offer self-paced or what's called asynchronous instruction, meaning it's generally not real-time instruction with a teacher. Sometimes teachers do live classes via video, but they're often optional. And parents are usually expected to be home with their students and often act as instructors. And, you know, as with anything, there are two sides to that coin. So families may choose these schools partly for these reasons, so that students can move at their own pace or take advantage of the flexibility of choosing when they're doing their work. But school officials also told us that students can struggle with the level of independence this type of learning requires, and parents have found the time commitment sometimes to be overwhelming.
So why would a parent choose a virtual charter school?
Oh, there's a lot of reasons why families might choose virtual school. So some students may have chronic medical conditions that make going to school in person difficult. Some families choose virtual schools because they have concerns about bullying or safety. Sometimes families who are homeschooling their children enroll their kids to get supplemental curriculum and instruction. My own daughter takes a virtual class part-time because her public school doesn't offer AP Latin, so she takes AP Latin online.
Public schools are required to meet certain standards. Are there similar requirements for virtual schools, including charters?
Yeah, so virtual schools, these are public schools, so they have to meet all the same standards as brick and mortar public schools. A tricky one is taking attendance, right? This can be harder when students are not showing up in person. And we found a lot of variety in the ways that virtual schools do it. It can even be inconsistent within a single state. And that might not sound like a big deal, but it can result in data reliability issues with a state's attendance data. And that also has implications for the amount of state and federal funding these schools receive. Another standard that's tricky for virtual schools is participating in state testing. So the goal is to have 95% of students participate. But we found that the participation rate for virtual school students is substantially lower than for students in brick and mortar traditional schools and in brick and mortar charter schools.
I guess I don't really understand the connection between attendance and funding and how that would work or be tracked for virtual charter schools.
Right. So attendance can determine enrollment numbers, which can affect the funding that a school receives. So a traditional definition of school attendance focuses on the presence of a student in a classroom or a school activity. And that generally isn't applicable in a virtual environment. So because it's tricky to think about attendance virtually and what that means, there's risk that attendance numbers for virtual schools are inaccurate. And that translates to an increased risk that virtual schools might receive more or less funding than they should. Now, education has no policy on tracking attendance in a virtual environment other than guidance related to the COVID-19 national emergency. And that's despite the fact that many districts across the country established new long-term virtual schooling options in the 2021-2022 school year.
So, Jackie, I know our report looks at pre-COVID numbers, but all we've been hearing about lately is the importance of keeping kids in classrooms and the social and educational benefits of in-person learning. Why then might enrollment in virtual learning increase?
First, it's important to remember that although enrollment in virtual schools is increasing faster than in any other type of public school, we are still talking about relatively small numbers of kids. So there's about 49 million public school students in the United States, and between 400,000 and 500,000 of them were in full-time virtual schools during the 2019-2020 school year. That said, when the pandemic initially forced most schools to go virtual, some families looked for schools that had experience doing virtual learning instead of putting their kids in a school that was sort of learning on the fly. And at the same time, when schools started to reopen, families that were nervous about the safety of in-person learning sometimes opted for virtual schools.
So Jackie just told us that enrollment in virtual schools is increasing and that they may appeal to parents for a number of reasons. But even so, there are concerns about student performance and attendance at virtual schools, and the Department of Education is responsible for monitoring these issues. So Jackie, what could the Department of Education do to improve its oversight of virtual schools?
So we do have a couple of recommendations in the report to help with this. For virtual schools, you know, we recommended that education help states ensure that they are reporting comparable attendance data across their virtual and brick and mortar schools. And we also want them to identify challenges that are contributing to why virtual schools have significantly lower participation rates on those required state standardized tests, and to share those strategies to help states increase participation of virtual students on those state tests.
And what about other kinds of charter schools? Do we make any recommendations to education about them?
So for charter schools, which of course includes virtual charter schools, they are often run by management organizations, some of which are for-profit. Education's Inspector General reported that these relationships can increase financial risk because an interest in profits may outweigh a school's interest in providing high-quality educational services to students and complying with federal program requirements. So education started asking states to report on these relationships, but we found that those data were incomplete and inaccurate. So we recommended that education identify the factors that are causing underreporting and misreporting of information on management organizations, and then take steps to help states report accurate data on those contracts.
And last question, what's the bottom line of your report?
I think the bottom line is that enrollment in these schools is growing, so clearly there are things about an all-virtual model that appeal to some families. But on average, these schools perform much worse on state assessments compared to brick-and-mortar traditional schools and charter schools. And these schools also pose increased financial risks due to challenges measuring attendance. And for charter schools specifically, those contracts with management organizations can also present some risk. Thankfully, education agreed with our three recommendations to address these issues and said that it could do more to help states address these challenges.
That was Jackie Nowicki talking about GAO's recent report on the challenges facing virtual charter schools. Thanks for your time, Jackie.
Thanks, Holly.
And thank you for listening to The Watchdog Report. To hear more podcasts, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And make sure to leave a rating and review to let others know about the work we're doing. For more from the Congressional Watchdog, the U.S. Government Accountability Office, visit us at gao.gov.